My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip, and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth, and beyond. So you nail your breastfeeding and decide to introduce a bottle to your baby, either expressed breast or formula milk. Perhaps you're returning to work or required to be away from baby for a period of time. You've seen videos of babies happily sucking away on the bottle and expect the same from your little one. But they say no thank you to the bottle and you find yourself purchasing every bottle going in desperation. Now, I'm speaking from personal experience here. You are most definitely not alone. Bottle refusal can feel both frustrating and massively challenging. This week, I'm joined on the podcast by Beck Hodgson, a lactation consultant and practicing midwife. I'm also delighted that Beck is the resident lactation consultant on my YPJ course at Midwife Pip. And if there is someone who knows plenty about the issue of bottle refusal in breastfed babies, it is Beck. So I am delighted to be picking her brains for you all today. So welcome, Beck, and thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I know you've had a busy day with Midwife Pip because you've been speaking with our community as well on various feeding aspects. So thank you for letting me steal even more of your time.
That's fine, no worries. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited.
I'm so excited to have you on. Now, Beck, before we delve into bottle refusal, can I ask a question? Because as midwives, there are clearly lots of areas that we can specialise in. Why was infant feeding the thing for you? What kind of drew you to it?
So I don't think it was really just one thing, but I'm a community midwife mostly. I've been a bit of everywhere, but mostly community. And that was like my main thing that I love. Like all of us have like a passion, don't we? And when I'm supporting families with on their feeding journey, I just felt like that was a bit of me. And I felt like I wanted to learn more so I could support families that little bit more and get that bit more of knowledge to be able to support them through their journey a little bit further, really. So that's kind of where it came from. So I did a little bit of a stint as an infant feeding specialist at my local trust. And then that spurred me into wanting to learn more about doing my lactation consultancy, really. Mm. And it kind of came from there. So I love it. I love being able to support the families and use my skills. It's great.
And thank goodness, you know, that people like you, Beck, have chosen to specialise in that, because I think it's one of those things that I've talked about quite a lot on the podcast and on my platform that we, you know, it's no surprise to anyone, I don't think, nowadays to hear that there are great benefits to breastfeeding, you know, for mums and babies. I feel like we've done a good job of getting the message out there. But what I feel we've done a really poor job of is actually supporting people to do it. I feel like we've spent loads of money saying how great it is. And then we're like, off you go. Good luck. Yeah. And it's a massive thing. It's such a huge, huge challenge.
Yeah, and it's really hard as well. Like, I think we don't necessarily tell families that it can be really difficult in the first few weeks. And sometimes, even from like professionals, you hear like, oh, yeah, it's fine. It's natural. Just, you know, just get on and breastfeed. It's fine. But actually, it's a skill like walking. So you have to learn it. It's not a skill like breathing where it just comes naturally to you. Mm-hmm. So you and your baby have got to learn together. And it's really important that we get the knowledge out there to support the families. And yeah, I agree, we're not really doing that very well at the moment, so hopefully that's what I'm trying to kind of achieve by doing these things and with yourself and on my own social media accounts to try and get that information out there a little bit better.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You're doing a great job. So if I take myself back to 8 week postnatal PIP, which feels like a lifetime ago, but in reality, in 18 weeks is going to be where I'm back to, which is slightly terrifying.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, why won't this baby take a bottle? I'm a midwife. I have bottle fed thousands of babies and they just all take a bottle. Is bottle refusal an actual thing? What is it?
Yes. So bottle refusal is when our like breastfed babies refuse to take milk from a bottle. So it's unrelated to the contents of the bottle. So it's not because you're giving express or you're giving formula. Mm. It tends to actually be the action of bottle feeding that is different. So when we think of a baby breastfeeding, they exercise all of their facial muscles. So they use all of the muscles that are used for like opening and closing the jaw, the muscles that run up the side of the face and the jaw and into the skull. So it's like a full like facial and jaw movement, as opposed to when we're bottle feeding, they just use that inner cheek muscle. So if you think about how different them actions are, so your bottle feeding baby is just using them inner cheeks and just kind of sucking away at the teats, whereas a breastfed baby is doing that whole facial movement. So it's an entirely different way of feeding. So when we think about introducing a bottle, we're kind of thinking, oh, the baby's just going to, you know, get on and do it. But actually, we're asking them to change entirely the way that they're feeding. So that's why you get that bottle refusal, because they've got to learn a new skill, essentially.
That's really good to know, because I think often when we talk about barriers with newborns, whether it's, you know, sleep or putting them down or whatever it might be, I think often when we take a step back and actually put ourselves in the shoes of the baby and try and sort of recognize really what they're going through, because there's so much learning and development, isn't there, in those early weeks and months, yeah, that actually we always underestimate, I think, how challenging some of these tasks that we just expect them to do may be for them. So how common, Beck, do you think bottle refusal is? I know there's probably no hard and fast stats out there, but in your experience.
Yeah, so there isn't really any statistics, but it is really common. So because we're expecting our babies to learn a new skill, and if we kind of like change our mindset to, instead of we're just offering them a bottle, we're actually asking them to learn a new skill, it's understandable that it is really common. So some resistance is really common. Entire bottle refusal, where you don't really get any further and they never take a bottle, isn't as common. But it's definitely still happens, because our breastfed babies have learned that skill. They've perfected that skill. Mm. And then we're asking them to learn a different one. And, you know, it is individual to each baby. So it can be based on their temperament and their personality. So some babies might be happy to switch between breast and bottle, whereas other babies might be like, absolutely not. I've learned this skill of breastfeeding and there's no way that I'm going to be learning this new skill. And it just is dependent on your baby, really. So there's lots of tricks and things that we can do to try and encourage them to take a bottle. But ultimately, they're learning how to feed in an entirely different way. So that muscle and jaw movement is entirely different. It's a new sensation. Their drinking pattern, so like the way that the milk actually comes into their mouth and they drink it, is different. Mm. The texture of the teat as well. So it's so, so different that actually, if we try and like change how we think about it, it's understandable why we may get some resistance. But some of the things I'm going to chat about will hopefully help you to kind of help your baby on the journey to taking a bottle.
Amazing. I mean, I'm absolutely taking notes of all this, Beck. I need all the advice for this next baby. So that's amazing. And I think, you know, when you think about learning a new skill, I think of, you know, when you're encouraging your baby to roll over or something. And we know that takes weeks, sometimes months, of encouragement, perseverance, you know, gentle kind of support. And I don't think I certainly didn't treat introducing a bottle in the same way. I was very much like, it's a mode of feeding, like you're hungry, you'll feed, rather than actually thinking how I taught Finley to roll over or to, you know, talk or sign language actually was completely different. So that's a really, I think, valuable lesson for me and for everybody listening. Now, is there an age, Beck, when introducing a bottle may potentially become harder? Because I know that timing is something that lots of new mums, new parents worry about.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a fine balance, really. So we know that our babies have like an innate sucking reflex until around 2 to 3 months. And then at that point, it becomes like a choice. So ideally, the sweet spot is kind of probably about 4 to 6 weeks. And that's because it's not too late that that sucking reflex is gone, that reflex, where the baby kind of will just suck whatever you put in the mouth. Whereas we don't want to do it too early, though, because if we introduce it too early, so say like two weeks, something like that, then we can go the other way and get nipple confusion where baby becomes really confident with bottle feeding, because as we talked about the muscles earlier, it's easier for a baby to bottle feed than it is breastfeed. So they're using smaller muscle groups and it's not as tiring. So if you've got a baby that's just kind of learning both, some babies will prefer the bottle feeding because it's easier. So if we're doing it too early, we can cause the problem the other way and get breast refusal. So we don't want to be doing it too early. So we want to give baby time to learn how to breastfeed firstly. Also, we know in them up to them first 4 to 6 weeks, your baby is responsibly feeding at the breast and priming all of them prolactin receptors for that ongoing milk supply. Mm. So we know that a baby is more effective at the breast than a pump. So if we're introducing pumping and bottle feeding alongside breastfeeding, then we're going to be replacing some of them feeds at the breast with pumping or potentially longer stints of a baby not feeding, which then means that not as many prolactin receptors will be primed for that ongoing supply, if that makes sense. So we don't want to go too early. So that's why I normally say about 4 to 6 weeks is that kind of sweet spot, really, that you want to be introducing it. But it is also kind of important to think of their age. So if, for example, if you're returning to work, say, and your baby is maybe like 9 months old, it's about also thinking, do we actually need a bottle? Because it's recommended that we get rid of bottles by about the age of one to help with like the teeth and the mouth development. So actually, if you're getting kind of close to that point, you might be able to just skip a bottle altogether and use a cup or like a sippy cup, things like that. So it's kind of thinking about all the different ages, really, and introducing it at the right point, but also seeing whether you might be able to just skip bottles altogether.
And I think that's really reassuring, actually, because that was our lifeline in the end, was at 6 months, our little boy, when he started weaning, just picked up an open cup and drank water from it. And we were like, yeah, okay. So actually, when I then returned to work, my husband would give him water and yogurt quite often. So he didn't starve, you know, until we were reunited, or he'd, you know, pop my Express milk into a cup instead and got around it that way. And I think that's reassuring that actually it may not look like the traditional thing that we may be used to seeing and may expect with bottles, but actually there's a way of getting that nutrition and hydration into your baby if that does become kind of an ongoing barrier. I think it's reassuring there's an option that isn't a bottle if it just isn't happening for you and your family, or you just don't want to, either way, really. My other thought, Beck, was, does it matter what type of bottle or brand of bottle you use? Because there is obviously so many options out there.
Yeah, so no, it doesn't matter about the brand. So there's hundreds of brands out there. And there's, you know, your cheap bottles to your really expensive ones. None of that matters. So try to avoid the breast-like marketing. So you'll see loads that's saying like, oh, most like a breast, the best bottle for breastfed babies. That is just a marketing ploy. They're often really expensive. And actually, there is nothing like the breast. So you're not going to be able to manufacture a bottle that is like the breast because it doesn't work in the same way. So these breast-like bottles tend to be like short, stumpy teats with a real round base. So they essentially look like a breast. But actually, we know that that hard plastic doesn't behave like breast tissue. So even if you've got a really soft kind of silicone, it's still rigid compared to the breast. It's not pliable like breast tissue is. And it makes it difficult for baby to get a deep latch because if you think of like silicone, it's quite slippy. So if your baby's trying to get a deep latch, they can just keep slipping off. So it's not breast-like. So it's actually better to opt for a longer teat with a more like gradual slope from the base to the tip. And the reason for that is because if we think about how a baby latches to the breast, they take a big mouthful of breast tissue and they lead with their chin. So it enables them to take that big mouthful and actually allows the nipple to get right to the back of baby's mouth into that soft palate. So if you were to feel with your tongue across the roof of your mouth, right to the back, it drops off into a soft palate, and that's actually where your nipple needs to go. So if we think about a longer teat, it actually will allow that teat of the bottle to get into a similar place as it does when we're breastfeeding. Whereas if you've got a breast-like bottle teat, that short stumpy teat is never going to get to the back of that soft palate because that silicone or that hard plastic is not going to mold like the breast tissue would. So opting for them longer teats with like that sloping, gradual elongation of the teat tend to be better, but it is also a little bit of experimenting. So I don't want you to go out and buy like 10 different teats of varying price range, but we just need to kind of like have a little look at opting for that longer teat. But actually, if that's not working for your baby, maybe try a different one. But them cheaper ones are just as good as the expensive brands. So looking at them cheaper options, because there's no point spending a fortune on different bottles trying to see what works for you, when actually the cheaper ones are often just as good. It's just kind of powerful marketing that gets these big, you know, titles and gets the Google searches that come up when you're a desperate mum typing in stuff into Google. That's what comes up. But also the teat sizes as well. So obviously as babies get older, if you're bottle feeding, you move up the teat sizes as baby gets bigger. But actually, if we are just switching from breast to bottom, it can sometimes be useful to go for a slower flow. So maybe like what a newborn or a younger baby would use, because that is likely to be more similar to breastfeeding. So when a baby breastfeeds, they are the active participant in that feed. They are drawing that milk out with negative pressure. Whereas when babies bottle feed, the bottle kind of, the milk drips into their mouth. So to kind of mimic breastfeeding, it can sometimes be useful to get a slower flow. However, if you've got a fast letdown, your baby might get really frustrated with that slower flow, and actually your baby might need a quicker flow to suit them better. So it is playing around a little bit with different teat sizes as well to see what works better. But normally a slower flow is a little bit more similar to breastfeeding, but also making sure that the position that you're holding your baby for them bottle feeds is like upright and a paced feed, which I'll go on to a little bit later. That also helps to slow that feed down as well and mimic breastfeeding.
Golden. Absolutely golden information, Beck. I've got a box in my attic full of every single bottle that I could possibly ever find when I was desperate and exhausted and wanting 5 minutes without a baby on the breast. So
yeah,
that is really helpful because, like you say, it does drive you to that real desperation. And sometimes, actually, if your plan was combination feeding and it doesn't work out that way, then you can feel a little bit kind of trapped and isolated. And so it's nice to know that actually there are things you can do. And then, like you say, there is a transition that doesn't involve a bottle. It's not forever. Now, I know that those listening that are in the midst of bottle refusal are thinking, yeah, I get all that now, but what can I actually do to encourage my baby to take a bottle? So Beck, what can we do? What can we try? We'll give it all a go.
So the most important thing before we even start thinking about what we can do is that we create positive feeding experiences. So we know that if babies have negative oral experiences, so if they are having like bottles or shoved into their mouth, that, you know, they were being quite forceful, that can create a negative experience for baby during that feed, which can then later in life cause things like feeding aversions. And babies that what we typically would call as like picky eaters, or children that aren't interested in eating. And we know that we can sometimes trace that back to negative feeding experiences. So with any feeding experience, breast, bottle, anything, we want baby to have a nice positive experience. And that's kind of should be our gold standard anyway, because for ourselves, when we're eating or hydrating, we want to have a positive experience too. So creating like a nice relaxing environment that's for your baby, and kind of having like a low pressure environment. So I know that's easier said than done, because when you're in the midst of that and you're desperately want your baby to take a bottle, it can get quite like I need you to take a bottle, but still trying to create that positive experience throughout that. So one of the main things is the mum not offering the bottle. So, and the reason for that is because baby's used to you giving your baby the breast all the time. So when you bring out a bottle, they're like, "Why is this? We've never had this before. You've literally got milk right there. Why keep making me want to have this bottle when I could just have it direct from the source?" So having somebody else offer the bottle as opposed to mum can be a really useful trick. And also, these babies seem to have a sixth sense of knowing when you are in the vicinity. So sometimes having you leave the house when they're trying to give the bottle can help a little bit as well, because you're not an option. You know, they can't smell you, they can't see you, they can't hear your voice. They know you're not there, so they haven't got any other option if they're hungry. So sometimes that can be a really good trick too. But trying to get a baby in that sweet spot. So we talk about feeding cues as midwives, where we want to get our babies for feeds when they're showing them early signs. So they're putting their hands to their mouth, they're turning their head, they're rooting. We want to get baby at that point, as opposed to a baby that's crying and irritable. And that's even more important when we're trying to get this transition from breast to bottle. And that's because if we've got a baby that's really hungry and irritated, they're not going to want to learn a new skill. They're just going to want to have what's familiar to them. And then starting to use things that may be similar to when mum is breastfeeding. So use emotional movement, rocking, swaying, maybe bouncing. If you've got a birthing ball, sitting on a birthing ball, that sometimes that just motion and movement can help baby to, you know, want to take the feed. Offering a feeding skin to skin as well, so that close connection, so we know skin to skin is real beneficial for our babies and for us at any point in your journey, but also that close connection whilst you're offering the feed can sometimes encourage them and entice them to want to feed. Wrapping the bottle in something with mum's scent on it, or wearing her top or dressing gown, having something nearby, as well as offering the skin to skin, that can kind of almost trick baby essentially into thinking that, you know, it's very similar to breastfeeding. So you've got that skin to skin contact, baby's warm, content, their heartbeat and their temperature and their breathing is being regulated by yours, and then that scent and smell of mum nearby. And trying different positions. So I mentioned about pacing feeds. So we want baby to be upright. So we traditionally, we used to see babies laying really quite flat and the bottle being held really vertical. We know that that makes babies more likely to be overfed, because they can't actually control the feed. We as the person giving the bottle are actually in control in that position. So for all bottle fed babies, we should be moving away from that and actually into a more paced, responsive position. So we want babies to be more upright, and we want to have the bottle horizontal. The reason for that is that baby is then in control of the feed as opposed to us. So baby can take regular breaks when they want to. They'll tell you that they want a break by doing things like fingers flaying. So they're kind of putting their hands up, they're turning their head away, they might be dribbling milk out, losing eye contact with you and looking elsewhere. These can be some of the signs with like a young baby that actually they want to take a little break, and it's important that we kind of pick up on them, because it's a two-way relationship with feeds. And sometimes when we have our bottle-fed babies, we miss these little cues that a breastfed baby we would kind of pick up on, because they would just take themselves off because they're in control of the feed entirely. But pacing the feed in this way allows baby to regain that control again. So the different positions you could potentially try. Obviously, normally we see babies like in the crook of your arm for bottle feeding, but sometimes that can make them a little bit unsettled because it is similar to breastfeeding and they're like looking at you like, oh, I'm not really sure what you want me to do. So sometimes a little bit of distraction can help. So turning your baby kind of to face outwards so they can look at the world around them and be a little bit distracted. Or kind of sitting them on your lap. So you'd kind of put your knees up, lay your baby onto your knees, or kind of hold the back of their head in your hand. So you're looking at your baby and you've got that eye contact, but it's away from kind of the breast area. That can sometimes work with some babies. And then in terms of actually encouraging them to take the teat into their mouth, we want to simulate breastfeeding here. So we want to encourage the baby to latch to the teat. So we'd kind of want to rub the teat on the top of baby's top lip or in between the bit between their nose and their top lip to encourage them to open their mouth wide to root and to latch onto the breast similar to, onto the teat similar to how we would on the breast. And then playing around with different milk temperatures. So some babies like warm milk, some babies like cold milk. So kind of trying different temperatures to see what your baby prefers can help. So they're kind of things to try, but the main thing is making sure it's a positive experience. So trying to be as relaxed as possible. I know that's easy to say, but try not to panic and kind of go with your baby's cues and get them in a happy, kind of more relaxed mood. So that might be when they've just woken up from a sleep, because obviously they're driven by hunger at that point, but they're not too hungry that they're getting unsettled. So just kind of rousing from a nap might be a good time to try. But you know your baby best. So when they're kind of in that happy, relaxed state, it's probably the best time to try it.
That's such a good tip, Beck. I love that last one in terms of that timing, because I think often you think, oh, we'll wait till they're really, really hungry. But we all know that when babies are really, really hungry, they're really, really angry. They're the ultimate hanger, aren't they? So actually, in terms of getting a really positive, relaxed environment, it's a bit like I remember thinking when you're weaning and they're really hungry, it's a bit like when we're starving and we just want to like shove a sandwich in quickly and someone gives us chopsticks. You're like, no, this is not the time to faff around with chopsticks. Yeah. We just need what we know. And it's, I guess that's the kind of thing that's going through our baby's head. So that's really helpful. And my last question, Beck, was that what could the alternative be for parents if bottle refusal is unresolved? And I know we've kind of touched on this already in terms of not using bottles and skipping ahead because of the recommendations to stop those once they're over 12 months anyway. But is there anything else that you would say to people listening or any other tips on that?
Yeah, so firstly, don't panic. So we've kind of talked quite a bit about this, but actually to just be relaxed about the whole situation, and that is sometimes a little bit difficult, but actually by hopefully listening to our podcast here, you will understand that there is other options and that can help you not to panic as much. Because I understand when you need your baby to take a bottle, or you know, you just want a bit of you time, or you're going back to work, you feel sometimes like backed into a corner. If your baby isn't taking it, you don't really know where else to turn. So firstly, knowing that you've got other options. Secondly, knowing that it's some babies will just not be that interested in taking expressed milk or taking formula or cow's milk when you're not there. So obviously it depends how old your baby is. If your baby is kind of under a year, we know that milk is their primary nutrition. So we need to be offering them either breast milk or formula. However, if they're over a year, they could be offered cow's milk, or some babies will just be more than happy with plenty of meals, snacks, and lots of water when separated. So we know that some babies will take minimal milk throughout the day, and then they'll do something called reverse cycling when you come home. So when you're reunited, they will feed and feed and feed all night long, and that's them kind of filling their tank full of milk. And this is really normal, although it can be exhausting. That is normal behavior that we sometimes see when you are separated for longer periods. So, or if there's a big change, for example, you're going back to work, or your baby's started going to childcare. So if your baby is one of the babies that doesn't really want milk at all when you're away from them. So I had one of these babies that initially I thought, oh gosh, like you're only 11 months old, you should be having milk. But if they don't want it and you're offering it, there's not really anything else you can do. So just making sure they're drinking plenty of water and offering other foods is enough, because then they will typically do that reverse cycling and feed a lot in the night. I'm really working with biology. So our babies are carry mammals. So we are similar to monkeys and kangaroos. Our babies want to be close to us. And when they're away from us, that's when them instincts and they kind of kick in and they signal to us that they need reassurance and settling. So when you are separated from your baby and somebody else is looking after your baby, if they are, you know, becoming unsettled, reverting back to what we know works, so skin to skin, cuddling your baby, baby wearing, so using a carrier or a sling to help settle your baby, that's the things that are probably going to work quite nicely when you're whoever's caring for your baby is going through a difficult period, if milk isn't you know, really working at that point. And our babies are really clever, so they won't starve. If they are hungry and they need milk, they will have it in some form, or they will look for other things to satisfy themselves until you're reunited. So trying things like a sippy cup or an open cup could be an option. So you can use these from about 4 months. However, an open cup can be used as early as the day your baby is born. So this sounds crazy when we say it, but this is called something called cup feeding. So in the like hospital and in the community, we may use a cup if you were breastfeeding and we didn't want that nipple confusion in the first few weeks. And basically you put an, if it's a small baby, you would put the open cup up to baby's lip and you would allow the milk to kind of sit on the edge of that cup, and your baby will lap that milk up like almost like a cat. And you would sit your baby in an upright position, sat on your knee. You would need a really alert, awake baby to do that. So you're not actually pouring the milk into your baby. Your baby is actively drinking the milk. And then obviously with an older baby, a baby that can sit up and has got head control, offering them an open cup, you'll be surprised actually. Our babies have got lots of skills that if we give them the opportunity, we can tap into them. So using an open cup, using a sippy cup. So there is lots on the market. There's same as with bottles, there's loads and loads of things out there. Personally, I see a lot of success with just an open cup or a free flow sippy cup. And I, with my daughter, used a munchkin cup. I really liked that. You know, it was kind of a middle ground between not having the messiness of an open cup in your living room, and also it doesn't spill when you drop it like a free flow sippy cup would. So there's loads on the market to kind of look at. Obviously you've got a straw cup as well when your baby's that little bit older, so you can try all of these cups as soon as your baby's sitting really and it's got good head control. So normally about 4 or 5 months. A straw cup might be a little bit older, normally about 9 months, just because that's a different skill, but some babies master it easy. So it's just kind of like realizing that there is other options out there and seeing what works for you, and just kind of go with the flow essentially. Your baby will kind of lead you in the right direction, but try not to panic and just see where it takes you.
Oh, it's so reassuring, Beck, because I know for anyone listening that is in that, like, it has to be a bottle. It has to be a bottle. It's, you know, it's got to work out. Actually, it's really good to think, okay, if this isn't going to work out, what else? What else is out there? Thinking outside the box, because you will find, like you say, a method that works for you and your family at the right time. So it's not all hope lost at all, which is reassuring when you're in the depths of the frustration. Beck, everyone that comes on the podcast, I ask for 3 top tips. So I wondered if you could give us your 3 top tips to parents concerned about or in the middle of bottle refusal.
Yeah, so firstly, take a relaxed approach and go with the flow. So if you follow your instincts, the same as with everything with parenting, you won't go far wrong. But it's actually giving ourselves the courage to follow them instincts, but also empowering ourselves and each other to actually go with it. Like, you know what you're doing. I know sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but we do, you know, we've got them instincts, and to just go with it, firstly. My second tip would probably be creating them positive feeding experiences for you and for your baby. So we want it to be a nice experience. We don't want it to be stressful and fraught and you're kind of not sure where to turn. So firstly, you've done a fabulous job of coming on here and listening to the tips. You'll have been, I imagine, doing lots of different research on how to transition your baby to bottle feeding. So that's the first bit of helping you feel relaxed enough to kind of go with it. But then just creating the right environment. So trying to pick the best time to approach your baby with them feeds and creating a nice relaxed environment when you are offering the feeds can be really lovely as well.
Oh, Beth, it's just so useful. Hearing your reassuring words for parents, because you know what it's like, that postnatal time, it's so easy to compare yourself to others. So if you've got, you know, friends or family that are bottle feeding or, you know, something's worked for them, it's really easy to get really caught up on that. So I love your reassuring tone. I know how much that's going to help people. Sorry, I'll let you do your third.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I agree, because when you're in that postnatal period, I don't know if it was the same for you, Pip, but I just felt like my brain fell out when I had a baby. Yeah. And even with everything I know, I still felt like I questioned myself and there was doubt creeping in. But I think it's really important that we just like believe in ourselves and just go with it and feel empowered to just, you know what you're doing, just follow your instincts and just try and go with your baby's flow, really, and then my third tip is connect. So when we are separated from our babies, once you are reunited, really focus on that connection. So this is not just for our breastfeeding mums, this is for all mums. So we know that our babies, when we've been separated, they've kind of got their connection and their emotional cup is empty, essentially. And when you're reconnected, babies can be quite like unsettled, quite fussy. It can be really difficult for them first few weeks when you're adjusting to a new change, maybe like going back to work or childcare and stuff. But offering lots of opportunities for connection, both in like the morning before you go to work or you're separated, and then when you are reunited afterwards, can really help to fill their cup back up, and which can help reduce that reverse cycling and that separation anxiety. So this can be whatever works for you. So like playing, it can be like skin to skin, having a bath together, obviously your feeds, anything that you feel is connection for you and your baby enjoys can be really lovely things that can help fill their like emotional and connection cup, essentially, and help to reduce kind of the more negative sides of being separated. So if you've got, you know, a baby that's quite unsettled, that's probably my main thing that I talk about lots, getting lots of connection in.
Yeah, all the oxytocin, all the skin-to-skin. I still love skin-to-skin with my two-year-old. Like, we love it. Like, it will quite often take his top off and just come for a cuddle. There's just something beautiful about that connection, isn't there? Love it.
There really is. It's so lovely. And we never lose them benefits.
No, and eventually they don't want it anymore when they're, I'm sure, 14. It's not so cool to take your top off and cuddle your mum. So we have to embrace it when they're little. Beck, thank you so much. It has been fantastic to pick your brains, and I hope that for anyone listening that is going through this at the moment or concerned about it, that Beck's words of wisdom are reassuring to you.
Before I head off, I need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my show have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favor? And if you've ever enjoyed listening, hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference, helping me to keep bringing you episodes. And together, we can then reach and empower more women on this journey. If you are a pregnant or newly postpartum listener and are looking to have the healthiest, most positive and informed journey, then my exclusive Your Pregnancy and Your Postnatal Journey courses may be for you. I work with a select number of women in a bespoke way, with unlimited access to me and my expert team for the most transformative level of support at this important time in your life. We only get one shot at getting this time right. So to get in touch and find out more, head to midwifepip.com.